I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, April 24th, 2020, and this is episode 65 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. I just have to tell you the story really quickly because it happened today. I was out running errands for my mom, in part, and my auntie called me, and she was like, "Leslie, let me ask you something. You live out there in Whiteville. Do they have toilet paper and Lysol for the white people in their stores?" Now, for the record, I don't live in Whiteville. I grew up in Whiteville, but I am very happy with my neighborhood now that is very ethnically diverse and economically diverse. For my aunt, I guess anything this far in the suburbs is Whiteville. And I told her, no, there's no toilet paper or Lysol in our stores out here in Whiteville either. It's not just you. And she's like, "Well, I just had to check because you know how they do us." And I was like, I know, but it's everybody. We're all in this together. And I thought that was kind of hilarious. My auntie was born in the Depression, so she has seen a lot. And it's true. There's a lot of times when they don't have stuff in certain stores and they have it in other stores. I remember my grandmother, who lived in D.C. all of her adult life, she used to take two buses out to Chevy Chase, to the white grocery store, to buy her groceries because they had better meat and they had better, fresher vegetables and the prices were cheaper. So anyway, that's just a thing that happened. But no, we don't have any toilet paper either. Sorry, I would get some if I could. I would drive out. Maybe there's an even whiter place that I don't know about where they are stocking all the stuff, like they're saving it for them. So this was a tough week for me, particularly. I'm sure it was tough for other people too, but just emotionally, I've been having a hard time. And I was thinking about this week's best thing, because sometimes it's hard, you know, but sometimes it's really only hard because I tend to focus. I think it's a normal human thing to focus on the negative instead of the positive. So I will just list a few good things that happened this week. I had mentioned before, it was my birthday last Saturday, and my husband baked me a cake, so I didn't end up ordering any dessert from anywhere. I had a lovely lemon pound cake that was homemade. It looked crazy, but it tasted really good. And with a bonus, because he made a glaze, like a confectioner's sugar glaze, and I looked at the cake, and there were like lemon seeds all over it. So it wasn't a mistake, it was intentional. And I asked him, "Why are there seeds on the cake?" And he was like, "Oh, they're decoration. You know, I didn't have any sprinkles, so I decorated the cake with the seeds." I was like, "Oh, thank you." Which is just an encapsulation of his personality. So it's completely on brand for him to do that. Some other good things that happened. I got some really great feedback from some readers, and that's always really nice. And a friend was going through a really hard time, and so we were able to get together on Hangouts and just talk to her and help her through that. And that felt really good, and I was grateful to be able to do that. So yeah, those were some good things that happened this week. In writing news, another good thing is that I'm beginning to have some creative energy around a new writing project, new/old. So I've been doing a lot of thinking about what I'm going to work on next. And I was looking at one of my many manuscripts. Actually, my agent sent me a list of all of the things that I've told her that could be future projects. And I was like, "Oh, this is rather daunting, isn't it? Like, yes, no, these are all things that I've told you about over the course of the past few years." Oddly enough, the thing that I really think I want to work on now is not on that list. I had actually shown it to her. I think she just forgot about it. So it's not the Book of Secrets that I was looking at last week that I thought I would want to work on next. I just haven't been able just to muster that spark for it. But I was thinking about the other projects, and this is actually something that I've mentioned before in a couple of interviews when people would ask me what I'm working on next, and it's the story with the dragons. So this actually just came to me last night, and I haven't had a chance to reread what I have on it yet, but it was another full first draft, not a NaNoWriMo. Now, interestingly enough, this dragon project is a thing that I sent in when my editor at St. Martin's the very first time she contacted me, and she was like, "Oh, I read Song of Blood and Stone. I would like for you to pitch me your next project." And at that point, I was working on Cry of Metal and Bone. And, but I took a few weeks off. I think I took like 2 months to A, figure out how to do a pitch, you know, because at this time, at this point in time, I was unagented and had no idea. And then to, I had the kernel of an idea, but I spent about 2 months, writing the first three chapters and the synopsis, which I sent to her. And so this story kind of originates from there. That was early 2016. And over the course of the past couple of years, past 4 years, geez, but not recently, but somewhere in there, I did manage to complete a first fast draft and revise a few more chapters, change the beginning once or twice. At one point, I did send the first 100 pages to my agent. Now, this is a portal fantasy, so which apparently are hard. I had no idea when I was thinking about it or writing it that portal fantasies are difficult. And my agent had some feedback on it, and I was working on it, and then at one point, I just didn't have the time anymore, because that's when the Ursinger Chronicles kind of ramped up and I had to just focus on it for the past year and a half, just getting all the rest of the books out. So I hadn't wanted to initially go back to this world because it requires a lot of world building. It is another secondary world fantasy, although it's futuristic. So it's sort of post-apocalyptic slash utopian, like slash up dystopian. I'm not going to call it dystopian per se, although it could be called that, but in my mind, it's not. And I know this is probably very confusing because I don't want to say too much about it because I haven't finished writing it and who knows when it'll come out. But it does require a lot of world building, and my world building muscles are tired, you know, like, but I've already built most of the world because I had conceived of it in order to write the whole draft. And it was another one of those cases where I remember going back to revise it based on my agent's feedback. And I was trying to add layers of complexity. I remember, oh, I needed a caste system, and then I have to name it. And I already had these two different groups with different traditions and cultures. So inside of one of the groups, I was trying to go back and add a whole lot more stuff. And I think that I just need to dial it back. I know that I'm going to have to rewrite it from scratch. So being portal fantasy, it's about a character who goes into another world. So she starts in our world, and then she goes into another world. And so the our world part has changed drastically. Part of it, the age has changed a couple of times as I was trying to see, oh, can I make it this? Can I make it that? The situation has changed. The character's name has changed. The actual main character, her, I don't know if her personality, but her physical characteristics have changed. Because initially this was going to be a spinoff of the third Angel book, which if you've been paying attention, I haven't finished yet either. So when I first had the idea, that's what it was. Then when I was going to pitch it to St. Martin's, I was like, well, they might not want something that is connected to an existing property. So I just decided it wasn't technically a spinoff. I mean, it was, but it wasn't. And then I tried to make it middle grade. I tried to make it YA years ago. And so now I have to look at it again. But I feel that sort of internal, that spark, that fire inside of me for this story. And so as of now, that is the one that I want to work on and think about and put my energy to. So wish me luck. I had mentioned that I was going to be reading a craft book. So I am about a third of the way through this John Truby Presents The Anatomy of Story, 22 Steps to Becoming a Master Storyteller. I'm really enjoying it, though. This has a lot of good stuff in it. So the way that I have started to read craft books is I use one of my many notebooks. So a lot of times writers are notebook junkies. I am not immune to that. I have a bunch of notebooks that I've bought or acquired in some way, have been given to me. When my mother-in-law passed away, we found a huge stack of empty notebooks in her apartment. And I was like, oh, mine. She was a librarian. And so I guess she had the book bug and she had the journal buying bug too. So I didn't take all of them, but I did take some. So I have a lot of empty notebooks to use. And so author Sarah Cannon, who has a great channel, Heart Breathings, it's a YouTube channel where she does a lot of planner stuff, but a lot of notebook related content. And she does these. At one point, she was doing like trying to fill some of her empty notebooks. So every month she would get a different empty notebook and try to fill it with something. Now she has the serious addiction. I mean, she has dozens and dozens of empty journals and notebooks that she has acquired over the years. So I don't have it that badly at all. But anyway, so now when I read a craft book, I have designated one of these journals. So this is a bigger one. It's I'm not going to measure it, but it's almost letter size, not quite letter size, but like large paper. And I basically take notes on the craft books that I read in the specific journal. One thing that I discovered from bullet journaling is the value of numbering your pages. So I went in and by hand, because most of the journals that you buy aren't numbered, like they're not printed with numbers on them. I actually go in and number them myself. So, and then I put a table of contents in the beginning. So this particular notebook that I've started, it includes notes from Newsletter Ninja by Tammy Lebrack, Save the Cat Writes a Novel, and this one. So this is the third time I'm doing this. I also was doing some vocabulary stuff. So I would get like this word of the day email. And if it was a word I didn't know, I would write it in the journal so I could try to remember it. It didn't last very long though, but I think it's still a good idea if I could resurrect it. So anyway, as I read, I make notes in the journal. And that hopefully that the action of writing these things down by hand will help me to remember them. Yeah, like I said, I'm really enjoying this book. I'm enjoying the perspective on craft and some of the things that he has to say. When people put the same concepts in different words, it allows you to like incorporate it differently. So it's restating things that I kind of know, but he's saying them in a different way and he's using different terminology, and it just hits differently and it sort of uncovers different layers of meaning. So for example, for a couple of years, I've been using author Dan Wells' 7-step story method. I'm not sure if that's what it's called, but there's a whole series of YouTube videos that I had found where he goes through this and there were some worksheets. And so I just incorporated it into my massive spreadsheet. I have this like 10-tab spreadsheet with different plotting methods and different character development methods in each tab. That's how I usually get into it. I don't fill them all out. I'll fill out one or two. And then as I progress and as I need different methods, I will fill out other ones. So one of them is this Dan Wells method. One of them is Save the Cat is in there. I have like a GMC sort of a goal motivation conflict tab. I have one for just different methods. So in this Dan Wells method, there's 7 steps and they're in a specific order. So you start at the beginning with one, and then you number two is the last thing, and three is the middle. And so it's a specific order of coming at your story. And I always thought that the order of that was really interesting. And this book, Anatomy of Story, sort of opened my mind to other reasons why that order is really important. Why knowing the end of the character growth arc when you start is really important. And essentially just prevents you from going in circles. Like knowing how the character changes from what to what when you're starting out is just like the roadmap. Or if it's not the map, it's at least it's the destination. Like if you start and you have no idea how this character is supposed to change, and you try plotting and doing all this stuff, then you don't know where you're going. So it's just, you're just assaulted by the possibilities, which I feel a lot of times at the beginning of a project. So just the way he's approaching character development, and also the idea that character change requires moral change, that a character flaw is a moral flaw, I haven't thought of it in quite those terms before, because I struggle with the character flaw. Main characters should have an arc in most stories. The vast majority of stories are going to be a change arc, whether it's positive change or negative change. And in romance and fantasy, at least the kind of fantasy that I write, and basically all romance, is going to be a positive character change arc. And I know that, and I use that, but the idea that it's not just something is amiss in your character's life, but that there's an actual moral flaw, and that moral flaw is affecting other people negatively. Something that they're doing is harming others in some way. And so that is what has to change by the end of the story. That's something that I had never thought of in that way. I've never really heard put that way before. And it's incredibly helpful. And it's really been illuminating some things. I've been taking notes about possible revisions to Requiem of Silence when I get that back from my editor, just using these ideas. So I'm like I said, I'm only a third of the way through the book, but at this point, it's worth the cost of admission. So if you are a writer and are looking for a really good craft book, I definitely recommend this one. Some other writing-related things I've been doing. As I was still working on Book of Secrets and trying to figure that out, I used these cards for the first time that I had bought a few months ago. So I'm pretty sure I first heard about them on Michael Haspel's podcast, QFD, Quantum Froth Dispatches, which I've recommended before, even though it's sort of on hiatus now. The older episodes are great. There are this deck of cards. They're about tarot card size, so they're larger than your average playing cards. And apparently there are 88 of them, and on them, let me just read what it says because I'm going to get it wrong. Okay, it says 88 cards packed with story elements, character archetypes, twists of fate, and reversals of fortune. So each card has two different things on it, and you flip them over to get it. Like this first one I picked up says the fan. This person deeply admires someone and seeks every chance to sing his or her praises. And the other side of the card is the secret admirer, keeps to the shadows, too shy to publicly admit his or her adoration, et cetera, et cetera. So there's cards like the outsider, time, the assassin, industry, and despair. So just 88 times two things that can inform your story. And so you lay them out, you shuffle them and cut them, and then you lay them out in sort of like a tarot-esque spread. And there's a little booklet that gives you different spreads for different things. So there's a spread for just the basic story structure. There's a whole hero's journey spread. There's a relationship. There's a love story spread. And so the love story spread, you know, there's 9 cards that you lay in this particular order. And like, for instance, card 1 is the boy or whatever it says. Card 2 is the girl or whatever. So you get your 2 love interests. Card 3 is how they first meet. And so if I, so let's say the boy is the outlaw. Not all crimes hurt the innocent. So it's like a Robin Hood figure. And then the girl could be, the next card I'll pull is fortune. Against all odds, the tides of fortune turn for the better. So, like, these aren't real characters, but they can spark something. All right, so how they first meet could be justice. So let's say I have an outlaw and fortune, and they first meet with justice. So maybe it's a bad boy, anti-hero, light criminal type. And then if she is fortune, not exactly sure what that means, but how they meet is justice. So maybe they meet in the court. Maybe she is a judge. So the fourth one in the spread would be what prevents them from hooking up immediately. And that card could be the anti-hero. So maybe there's some other character who prevents them from hooking up. So it goes on like this. And I did a couple of spreads as I was working on Book of Secrets. And it just like opened my mind to a lot of different possibilities. It felt very, like I'd heard about using tarot for a similar thing, and I have a deck of tarot cards. I have no idea how anything about tarot, like nothing. So I bought them for another reason, for some research purposes. But I like these because they tell you what they mean on them. Like with tarot cards, I think you have to go look them up somewhere else and see what they mean. But it's a similar idea. So they're just giving you ideas and starting points and inspiration points for what could possibly happen. So I did a spread, basically the basic story structure and the love story. And it just yielded some really interesting things that I could tie into what I was doing, and that gave me some ideas for ways to approach the story. It could mean whatever you want it to mean. When I did the spreads, there was one or two cards that didn't mean anything. And in the book, it's like, if they don't work for you, just pick another card, you know, like try again. So yeah, I thought these were really cool. This deck is like $20. I'll link to it. They're called Story Forge cards, if you want to Google that. And I just think it's kind of a cool thing to spark something when you're stuck or feeling unmotivated or uncreative, as I have been for the past couple of weeks. This episode is already going a little bit long, but there's a bunch more stuff I wanted to talk about. But I will just answer a couple of listener questions that have come in through various forms, media, or whatever. Someone had asked, had I ever thought about creating a shared world with other authors or co-write with other authors? And at this point, I haven't thought about a shared world. I think that's kind of a cool idea. I have thought about like an anthology project. I really wanted to do this anthology based on an album, specifically Cree Summer Street Fairy album. I've already written one short story that was inspired by a song on that album, and I really want to do a collection of stories based on various songs. And I thought, oh, I could invite other authors who love this album because I'm not the only one. But I never like went for it with that project. So the universe, if anyone is interested in that, let me know. If you love Cree Summer's Street Fairy album and would like to write stories inspired by it, hit me up. But other than that, it's not in my immediate radar, but I think it's kind of cool. Another question was from Scarlett on YouTube, and she asked about struggling with the race of characters and if other authors, specifically Black authors, struggle with the race of their characters. And this is something that I think people do struggle with. There's marketing concerns about writing Black characters or characters of color in general, and that mainstream, quote-unquote, audiences wouldn't be able to relate to them. And then there's other people who just characters come the way they come. And if they come to you, whatever race they come, that's how you write them. I know that this is something that author Natasha Lane has talked about. Shout out to Natasha. She has an Instagram channel and she does videos there. And she's talked about getting grief from readers about her first book and her main character was white and why she chose to write that. And it's unfortunate that it is a question like that, that is something people have to struggle with. I think that the artistry has to take precedence. Like if your characters are coming to you, the way they look is the way they look, unless you want to change them. So I will admit, you know, like many people, my early stories were full of white people because that was what I read. And my husband likes to say that I got radicalized when I went to Howard University. But in some ways, it's true, you know, like going to an all-Black college after you've gone to all-white schools is a radical difference. And I think my mindset definitely shifted. And so even now, sometimes the characters will come to me, they'll start white, and I will have to consciously make them Black. That definitely happens to me, even to this day. And so it's deep-seated, it's ingrained. You see so much media from other people that, you know, even your creative life and your inner life just reflects that. And so depending on how you grew up and a lot of different factors, that could be it. So with me, sometimes the characters still come to me initially as white and then I'll just make them Black. That's it. And now they're Black. And so, yeah, I think that it is something that as writers, especially when it comes to covers and who's on the cover and will that affect sales? And there is evidence that it does absolutely affect sales, having Black people on the cover. And then how much do you care about that? So my answer to Scarlett was, you know, I think it depends on who you're writing for and why. And that's kind of why I approach it the way that I do. The second Angel book features Asian characters, but other than that, basically everybody I write about is Black. In some way or another, you know, they run this color spectrum. They might be biracial. They might not be. And what does biracial mean in different worlds and cultures and societies? I think that's also interesting, but that's how I have dealt with it. Last thing, I talked about Ingram Spark. And then a few days later on Joanna Penn's podcast, she mentioned that they have a coupon. So, free title setup and revisions until May 30th, 2020, using the code IngramSpark2020. And I'll put that in the show notes. So it was right on time for me, who was just bitching and moaning about having to pay to set up new books on IngramSpark to do print on demand. So the universe is listening on some level. I guess, or maybe it's just a coincidence. Who knows? I'm going to leave some other links in the show notes to stuff that I did not talk about because I feel like this is already too long. But the Jennifer Lynn Barnes workshop on the id list is like changing my life. So this was a workshop that she gave at RWA 2018. And if you were there and have the conference recordings, it is called Writing for Your Id. And if you don't have the recordings, you can actually buy this one workshop for $6. And I actually would recommend it because I think it's $6 well spent. I'm going to listen to it again. I'm also going to link to a podcast that she was on where she mentions the stuff, but I think the workshop that she gave was just so much more in-depth and so much better. But for free, you can listen to the podcast, the Red Sneaker Writers podcast. And I've been making my id list. So in short, she talks about how when, especially after you've got a few books under you and you study your craft more, you start to lose potentially some of the quote unquote guilty pleasures about your writing. And you start to think that maybe they're cheesy or maybe they're cliche and you can just lose something that way. So there's a whole thing she does in the workshop about the pleasures that make people want to read fiction and that make people like stories in general. And then why do we write them? How do we keep up our interest? And so creating a list of the things that we love in books and in fiction, everything from enemies to lovers to scenes on rooftops to people eating ice cream. Like these are some of hers. And so over the course of this week, I was already intending to do this because for my mastermind, it was kind of my homework for mastermind from last week, just to create a list of things that I love in my favorite books and things that I love to see. And with the idea that you try to put them in your own books. So when you approach a scene or a story that you're not super interested in writing or you don't have a lot of energy around, find a way to include something. So some of the things are big and some are small. Like things on mine are a hero who secretly pines for the heroine the whole time. I just love that. I can't get enough of it. San Francisco. Everything that I've written that's contemporary essentially takes place in San Francisco or Baltimore. And then they go to San Francisco. Only One Bed. Like, it's a favorite trope of mine. Grumpy Heroes, Secret Royalty, Star-Crossed Lovers. I haven't gotten down to like the tiny little things yet, but I've got about 25, 30 things on this list so far, and I'm going to keep adding to it. She says she has like 500 or 600 things on her list, and that's amazing. I keep it on Google Keep so I can just add to it on my phone from wherever I am. And I'm going to try to organize it better because she does give sort of categories and I think it would be nice to have it sort of categorized so I can look at like character versus setting and things like that. But yeah, that workshop has helped me. So there've been a number of things this week that have really sort of come at the right time and combined to give me a little bit more creative energy and to hopefully push me into the next project with more positivity and more joy around it and more just ability to embrace it and to really start strong, you know, start as you mean to go on. And I would like to start the next thing strong and with energy and with like verve. So that is really it for me for this week. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope that you are doing well and staying safe and doing things that you enjoy. And until next week, happy reading. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter, which probably will have a lot more stuff on it this week, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. I would love a rating or a review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.